Hello everyone, my name is Bert Jansen. I'm a service engineer in the SharePoint and OneDrive service engineering team, and I'm also a core member of the PNP team. In this module, I'm going to explain you more about remote timer jobs and event receivers. Topics we will cover here in the session are remote timer jobs. How can you build an equivalent for the SharePoint server-side timer jobs? Remote event receivers, so how can SharePoint reach your code when, for example, an item is added to a list? And finally, there is app events. App events in this case means mainly app installed and app uninstalling event receivers. So when you install an application to your site, what will happen and how can you trigger certain changes from an app installed event? This slide shows the Office developer vision. At the left side, we have Office running on different devices. Nowadays, we have Office on smartphones, on tablet, on PC, on laptop, all kind of devices, actually Office everywhere. At the right side, we have the data that we have in Office 365. So we have mail, we have documents, we have people, tasks, and so on. Now, when you build an Office add-in, you will be able to use this Office add-in in all the flavors of Office appearing on all the different devices that we have. So the same add-in, you will be able to use the same add-in on a smartphone, on your tablet, and on your PC. Which gives you the possibility to create powerful apps that run on, for example, on a tablet connecting to mail. You have websites running on a server that connect to SharePoint data and people data. You have your JavaScript running in a browser connecting to tasks. You name it, everything is possible today. Before we dive into the session details, I would like to give some recommendations. So the first one, remote timer jobs are really meant for scheduled tasks. Tasks that are running on a certain interval. If you need a more an on-demand model, you should definitely have a look at web jobs, because web jobs in combination with the Azure storage queues gives you a very powerful model where the code that needs to trigger a web job execution simply can write something in a storage queue. The web job will see it and will start doing its magic. So envision that you have a site provisioning application that you typically want to have as an asynchronous task. So when a user entered his site creation information, hit OK. At that point, you simply write that information into the Azure storage queue. There's a web job running. It's watching the storage queue. It sees the message, picks it up, and creates the site. So that's why web jobs are so super. Remote event receivers, which we'll also discuss in this session, are very powerful and in a certain sense similar to the event receivers we have in a full trust SharePoint code. But there is one important gotcha. When SharePoint Online fires remote event receiver, it will try to hit your event receiver service, and then if it hits the service, everything was fine, your event fires and your thing, your code is running. But if for some reason SharePoint cannot get to your service, that event will never be triggered again. So you cannot really rely on remote event receivers to 100% always fire. There is no guaranteed delivery of that remote event receiver message. So please do not build any logic or synchronization tasks that depend on this concept. And finally, event receivers do have timeouts. For example, app installed event receiver has to finish within 30 seconds. So keep that in mind when you write the code in there. It's better to keep the actual event short and push the bigger processing into an asynchronous process, for example, using Azure Web Jobs and Azure Storage Queues. So let's, with that introduction being done, let's move on to the first section. This is about placing the code outside of SharePoint. So, like all app developments, app model developments, I should say, the code is running outside of SharePoint. In SharePoint Online, there is no option anymore to put code on the server. And this also applies for remote timer jobs and remote event receivers. So, remote timer jobs is scheduled code using the client-side object model or REST to go back to SharePoint and do things. Remote event receivers is the opposite flow. Like SharePoint will call your code when it when an event fires. For example, you have an item edit event receiver. When an item is being added to the site, SharePoint will hit your item edit event receiver, and you can add your additional logic in there. Well, let's jump a little bit deeper in remote timer jobs. So, what are remote timer jobs? Remote timer jobs are actually very comparable with the classical full trust-code server-side timer jobs, but what that difference is that they're using only remote APIs, so CSAM API to talk to SharePoint. Typically, remote timer jobs are running on a scheduled basis or on a one-off basis. So you have them running each hour, or you kick off a particular run of a remote timer job. And how would you implement them? If it's for on-premises, a typical implementation there would be a scheduled task. So Windows has a good task scheduler. You can simply schedule the run of your console application, which is your remote timer job. Or you can make it more advanced by embedding this into a Windows service. If you're coding against SharePoint Online or using Office 365, remote timer jobs are best combined with Azure Web Jobs, because this gives you the most powerful flexible platform, especially since Azure Web Jobs also allow you the on-demand asynchronous execution, which will be explained later on in the session. To authenticate against SharePoint, the timer job needs to have some form of credentials. So either you can use a specific account with a username and password, or you can use an app-only token. Now, how does this work? So at the left side, we have our SharePoint environment. And what will happen is that the code running in your timer job at the right side, so number two, it will authenticate against SharePoint using app-only or credentials, and then we'll simply use CSOM to make changes. For example, check your site and update an item in the list. Now you might wonder, like, oh, but this code is running outside of SharePoint. Will that be slower than my old FTC server-side code? And the answer is probably yes, but like all app model code, the code has to run outside of SharePoint server. There is no way around. And that also gives you some additional advantages. It's very easy for you to deploy and update your code or to scale your code. You can have it run on multiple environments, multiple servers. So there are some definitely some advantages as well. And also, when you look at the timer jobs, these typically aren't super performance intensive, meaning that there are anyway kind of background processes. So if they run slightly longer in the new model, in most cases that won't hurt. There are two authentication options for remote timer jobs. One is app only, the other one is specifying credentials, so using an account. So for app only, you need to have a registered app ID and secret, which has been granted the proper permissions. You can do this via the apprec-new.hpx page to create an app ID and a client secret, and then using appinf to grant it permissions. Or alternatively, you simply create a provider-hosted application that you deploy, and as part of that deployment, an app ID and app secret is generated, and you then copy that one and use it for your timer job. A good thing with app only is that you control the tokens at the server side, so you can revoke permissions, and you can easily grant permissions across everything, so you can give tenant-wide permissions in Office 365, so that your app, your timer job code, is able to read all the sites. Downside here is that certain functionalities do not work using app only. Typical here is writing to the taxonomy store and writing to the user profile store. These don't work. Sorry, correction. All the user profile APIs do not work with app only, and writing to the taxonomy store is also not working using app only. For that, you need to use a specific account. Which brings us to the account section. So this is like more like you would do it yourself as a user. All the options here work, but you have to keep in mind that you need to securely store username and password. And definitely also think about ensuring that that account has access. So in Office 365, you cannot simply give an account access over everything. So for that, you would need to ensure that that ca account you're using is, for example, added to the site collection administrators of all the site collections. And in this demo, I'm going to explain you how you can build a remote timer job. The sample that we're going to show today is located in PNP under samples with the name core.simpleTimerJob. And when you open up this solution, you will see there are two parts. In the folder containing this the sample, there is a solution holding a provider-hosted application, and there is a project which is holding simply a console application. There's a specific reason for this structure. The remote timer job that you will see later on in the demo is using app-only authentication. So in order to make app-only work, you need to have a client ID and a client secret, and that has to be that pair which you get when you register in App Principal has to be granted permissions to the site that you want to operate against. So if your timer job, your console application is running against a particular site, it needs to have permissions to that one. There are two ways to kind of register and get the client ID, client secret, and set up the permissions. One way is using the apprecnew.aspx and appinf.aspx pages. Another approach, and it's the one shown in this demo, is that you simply create a so-called registration provider host application, in which when you launch and install the application, you will obtain a client ID and client secret, and the permissions are set properly, and you then copy over the client ID and client secret to your actual timer job console application. So that's the model that we will use in the demo way that I'll show you right now. So let's switch to Visual Studio. I've already loaded the timer job, and this is the solution with the provider host application that's only meant to set up client ID and client secret. So before you can run this guy, you need to set the SharePoint URL for the SharePoint application. So for core.simpleTimerJob. So if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see here that I've set the site URL to my developer site, and that the connection is online, which is needed before we can press F5. So let's hit F5. At this point, Visual Studio will deploy the application, ask the user for a consent dialog. Now, since already deployed the application before, I will not get a consent dialog. So I'm immediately ending up in my application. And as mentioned, this application, this provider hosted application, is simply there to actually obtain a client ID and client secret. Since we've run this application now, it means that we do have a new client ID and client secret, which we can find if you go over here, go to the web.config, we'll see our new client ID and client secret over here. So what I'm going to do now is actually copy the client ID and client secret from the web.config from the provider host application. I'm gonna open up the core.simpleTimerJob for the simple timers upload console project. Here we go. That's loading. Once that's loaded, I'm gonna actually open up app.config from this console application. Like here, and I'm gonna replace the client, the client secret that I've copied from the provider host application, and save. At this point, when I now launch this console application, it can use it has a valid client ID and client secret, which does have the proper permissions to operate against the site that we're using here. So this one. So this needs to be the same site then you install the app to, otherwise it won't work. Let's first press F5 and then talk about the code and the outcome of this one. So imagine this is running as a Windows service in on-premises or as a web job in Microsoft Azure. So you can run this kind of code everywhere. Now the run already happened and nothing really fancy happened from a UI perspective because you didn't see anything happening at all. But there is some output. So I'm going to switch back to my host web where I installed the application. And what we should see here is that there is a remote operations list being added with, if everything went well, with an item showing a timestamp. So in this case, we have this list here, remote operation, and an item with a timestamp of 9:27. Creating this list and adding this item here is done via the timer job that we launched. So let's have a quick look at the code of the timer job, which will also then conclude this short demo. I'm opening up program.cs. Let's zoom in slightly. So what is happening here is that we first of all are building a client context using an app only token. So for doing that, we need to fetch the realm of the URL. For that, we can use the get realm from target URL method, which is part of the token helper class, which is available in all of the SharePoint projects. Then we get app only access token, and with the access token, we're going to construct a SharePoint client context object over here. Once we have a valid SharePoint client context object, you can simply add the logic that your timer job would need to do. In our demo, it's a very simple logic, meaning we add a list with the name remote operation, and we add a new item where we put the current daytime in there. Pretty simple, but you can imagine that this can be your complex business process that's coded in here. So with that, I would like to conclude this demo. You can also use remote timer jobs to execute asynchronous tasks. So why would you like to do that? For example, when you have a long-running operation in your SharePoint application, then it doesn't make any sense for users to wait. So it would be better if you could simply trigger an asynchronous task that then is doing all the magic, and the user can simply keep on working without having to wait. How would you do that? If you're using Azure, and this all kind of depends on the approach and the platform that you're using, but for Azure, using Azure Web Jobs and Azure Storage Queues gives you this capability. This slide shows you the process. So we have a SharePoint site, number one here. And on that site, a provider host application is installed. So when the user loads the page, the provider host application, the app part of it, is also loaded. And without asynchronous operations, this provider host application would need to do all the functionality at that point. which would block the UI from loading, which would block the app from showing up. A better approach here is then to, instead of doing the processing right away, is to add a message to an Azure Storage Queue, number 3 here, and then have that message being picked up by a web job. So the web job is continuously running and monitoring the storage queue. As soon as there is a message in there, it sees it, picks it up, and starts processing it. In this case, processing means updating the web which hosted the application. So you might say, Microsoft, there are not that many remote APIs as we have today in server-side code, and that's correct. But do know that we're continuously adding new remote APIs and improving that area. There's also user voice where you can request your API. So if you have a particular use case where you miss an API, please raise it on user voice. Other people can vote on your request, and this way the engineering teams can prioritize their work. Now let's dive into remote event receivers. So remote event receivers is a piece of code, a service that's being called from SharePoint on an event. So to give you an example, when you have a remote event receiver connected to a list using an item added event, then when the user adds an item to that list, SharePoint will fire and call your remote event receiver service, where then you can add additional code that needs to happen after an item added has occurred. How you do that? By setting up a remote event receiver service and connecting that one to the actual event. That can be done using server-side code or client-side code. So in this schema, we have at the left side the user. Suppose the user goes to a SharePoint site, and on a particular site there is a library, and for that library there's that item edit event again. So when the user adds an item to that library, the event is triggered. And then the service is called, in this case the service living in the provider hosted application over here. Point 2 is indicating that when you need to go to SharePoint, you need to authenticate, which definitely is needed here. Now, important to know is that the authentication context is also passed along in the remote event receiver call. So the code running in your event receiver, in your provider host application here, it can connect back to SharePoint using the context of the user that triggered the event. And since we're running this event on a provider host application, so actually a website, you can see this is a simple website, your code can also easily connect to additional LAB systems that live in your enterprise. There are different scopes for remote event receivers, so we can have them at item level, at list level, so list edit for example, web level, and also for apps. So there's an app installed event and app uninstalling event that you can use. And events are either synchronous or asynchronous. So synchronous events fire with the actual event. So there is a before an item is added and an after. So the item adding is before and the item added is after. Asynchronous events are always added events, so with an ED, so item added, and will fire after the event, and there is no communication back to SharePoint. The current remote event receivers architecture is not a good choice for mirroring or synchronization solutions. This is because there is no guaranteed delivery of an event. So suppose there's an item added event that's being fired. SharePoint will only try to fire that event once. So it only will try to hit your service endpoint once. If for some reason your service endpoint is not up, the event will never be fired again. So we're not tracking those missed events and fire them again, which means that you miss some events which will potentially break your mirroring or synchronization solution. To create remote event receivers, there is a tooling in Visual Studio, but keep in mind that tooling is only available to add remote event receivers for lists for events actually in the app web. So if you want to do something in the host web, you have to use a code-based approach, which I will show later on in this deck. But for the app web, you can rely on Visual Studio, where there is a customization wizard that you can use to configure the events that you need. Regarding remote event receivers interface methods, as we already discussed, there are synchronous and asynchronous events. The synchronous events, they are called by the process event method. So when a synchronous event happens, this process event method in your event receiver is called. Whereas for an asynchronous event, it's the process one-way event. The difference is that for an asynchronous event, there's no way for you to provide feedback. Whereas for a synchronous event, you can have the SP remote event result class that you can provide as feedback. Synchronous events are, for example, an item added, an item adding. The adding, the ing events will happen before the actual event. The ed, so the item added events, will happen after the actual event. Asynchronous events are always ed events, so item added, item updated, item deleted type of events. Since the user context is passed to the remote event receiver service when SharePoint calls it, this gives you the option to create a client context object based on the calling user. So with the same, you can kind of take the context of the user that triggered the event to then do work for that user. So here you see in this using statement that there is the token helper dot create app event client context method that's being used to create a new client context, and then once you have a client context, you can do all the remote calls that you need. To hook up remote event receivers, there are two approaches. One approach is using the server-side object model, so full trust code to make this happen. Downside of this approach is that you need to have access to the server, being able to do this, which doesn't work for SharePoint Online. But if you're in a premises context, you could use this approach to hook up a remote event receiver. In SharePoint Online, there is a similar approach where you can use a code-based model to hook up an event receiver, like is shown here. In this demo, I'm going to talk about remote event receivers. In the demo, you will see you actually get a view on different type of remote event receivers. So there will be an app-installed remote event receiver that's triggered when we install our provider-hosted application. And when that app-installed event receiver fires, it will connect a new remote event receiver, namely an item-added event receiver to a list. So when I, within a minute, actually run the application, you will not see much happening. But in background, the app installed event receiver runs and it hooks up the other item added event receiver to a new list. And then we'll see what happens if we add an item to that new list. So with that, let's switch over to Visual Studio and dive into the sample details. Before we go into the actual running of the sample, a few things. This solution that I'm using for this demo is core.event receivers, which you can find under the samples folder of the PNP project. And it is a provider host application, so there is a SharePoint application and a provider part over here. Before we can run a SharePoint application, we need to properly set up a site URL and ensure that the server connection is online, which is the case here. So with this all kind of nicely set up, we can press F5, and Visual Studio will deploy our application to that site. Since we're using an app installed event receiver, Visual Studio will already ask us for to grant permissions to the app before we even log on, and this is needed to make the app installed event receiver being able to work. So we're going to press trusted here. At this point, the app is further deployed to the environment, and if everything goes well, the app installed event receiver will also fire as part of this app installation. So installation is still in progress. Here we get our logon prompt. So let's log on to the site. Sign in. Since already I did the consent dialog, we're not getting that one at this point, and we just end up in the our provider host application. Well, as said in the introduction, this one isn't really doing a lot of magic right now. That already happened during the installation of the app due to the app installed remote event receiver, which is described here. Now, what's the net result of this? So for that, we go to the host web. So I'm going to open up the host web in a new tab. And we'll see here that there is a new remote event receivers list being added, and that's done using the app installed event receiver. So when we go to this new list, I'm gonna add a new item. So BNP demo. Well, we leave that empty. I'm gonna hit save. If I hit save, the item added event receiver that we dynamically connected is triggered, and it updates the added item, which you can see here in the demo, because I added as description demo, and this part updated by remote event receiver was automatically added via our item added remote event receiver that we hooked up at during the app installation time. Righty, now let's have a look at what this actually means from a code perspective. I'm going to close this one and jump into Visual Studio. First of all, in order to work with an app installed event receiver, you need to enable it here at in your SharePoint project. So in this case, both app installed and app uninstalling are enabled. When you do so, Visual Studio will create this app event receiver service for you, and that's the place where you can add your app event receiver logic. So let's open up the code behind here, and here you see the process event method that's being called when the remote event receiver fires. So when SharePoint calls the remote event receiver, it hits this method. In this case, since we have the same event receiver that we used for the app installed, app uninstalling, and for the item added, we have logic here to determine the event type, and based on that we jump into a different method. So as said, during app install time, we added that custom list and hooked up an item added event. So let's have a look at what that actually means. If I jump into this method, actually the actual implementation is in this remote event receiver manager class. So let's jump over there. What we do here is we check for a list. If it's not there, we're gonna create this this particular list which has the name remote event receivers jobs. If we have the list, we're gonna check like okay, let's check if this our event receiver is already added to that list. If that's the case, we don't need to add it again, otherwise it would fire twice. So if it's not been added, we have code that will add the remote event receiver to the list. So once the remote event receiver is added to the list, and you go to the list and add an item to it, we go into this flow here back in the event receiver service. When an item is added, this case construct is being called. So when we go to the handle item added method, again this is in the remote event receiver manager class, so I'm going to switch over there. And what you see here is the simple logic that you saw in the demo, that we get the item, once we have the item we update the description and save the item back to SharePoint, and that's it. So in this demo you saw how an app installed event receiver can be used to customize the site when your app is installed, because we added the list, and also how you can dynamically connect additional event receivers from code. Are there any reliable alternatives for remote event receivers? As explained before, remote event receivers are not fired guaranteed. And that might be a problem for you. If you need to have a better execution model, workflow can be a potential solution for you, because workflow can call a REST service, and when the call to the service fails, it can do a number of retries. It will not have advanced queuing and that kind of enterprise features, but if a simple retry is sufficient, workflow can be a solution for you. Let's now shift into app installation events. So app event receivers can be used, can fire actually, when an app is installed, when app is uninstalled, or on app upgrade events. And like all other remote event receivers, it's SharePoint that will call into your remote event receiver service, where you can have your custom code running. That custom code can then be used typically, for example, to modify the host web. So if your app needs a particular list to be there on the host web when you install the app, using an app installed event receiver can trigger the code that will create the list in the host web. Keep in mind that the app installed event receivers, of app event receivers in general, are only available for provider hosted applications. There are some gotchas, some considerations that you have to take into account when you work with app events. First of all, there is a delay in events, so I should say a timeout actually. So the code running in an app installed event needs to finish within 30 seconds, and the SharePoint will retry 4 times if the app installed event does not return in 30 seconds. Which means that your app installed code can be partially fired 4 times, causing strange side effects, and not something that you want. So it's better there to ensure that either the code in your app installed event is small, so it can execute very fast, or that at that point you switch to an asynchronous model, which I'll explain in the coming slide. Also, if you work with app uninstalled events, be aware that deleting an app from the site isn't directly calling the app installed event. The app installed event will only be triggered when the app is truly deleted, and that means also deleted from the recycle bin. So here you see a schema where the left side we have a SharePoint site. And when an app is installed on the SharePoint site, so this provider host app number 2 is installed on the site, then SharePoint triggers an app installed event calling back into my provider hosted application. A good pattern here for asynchronous is to, instead of doing the logic in the application, is to simply add a message to the Azure Storage Queue. At point number 3 here. And then have a web job, number 4, that's listening to that storage queue. That web job then sees that something, message has been added to the queue, picks up the message, and makes the necessary changes. So if our provider hosted application required 10 lists with a lot of data in there to function, Then this web job will create those 10 lists and add all the data in there. And in this demo, I'm going to explain how you can debug remote event receivers. The actual code that I'm using for this demo is based on the PNP sample named core.eventReceivers. Now, before we can start debugging in Visual Studio, we need to prepare certain things. And the main thing to set up upfront is an Azure Service Bus. The reason why is that we need Azure Service Bus to be a bridge between SharePoint running in the cloud in SharePoint Online and the service running on your developer box. Why? Because your service runs in your kind of isolated environment using localhost, and as such, SharePoint in Online, when it needs to call the service, it cannot call into HTTPS localhost slash your service. That won't work, because localhost is meaningless for SharePoint when running in SharePoint Online. In on-premises scenarios, obviously this could work if you would have SharePoint and the code all on the same box. That model would simply work without having a service bus in between, but here it won't work. So with the service bus support we have for debugging, what will happen is that SharePoint will, instead of calling into localhost, it will call into the service bus, and Visual Studio running your code also calls into service bus, and when an event fires, the message flows over the service bus to your local a running instance. And at that point, the breakpoint will be hit, and you can start stepping into the code. So let's first have a look at how to set up your service bus to be used in Visual Studio. Creating a new service bus for this purpose must be done using a PowerShell, because the UI that's available to create a service bus doesn't allow to specify the properties that we need here. So once you have opened up your PowerShell and have loaded the Azure support module, or opened just an Azure PowerShell PowerShell session, the first thing to do is doing the add account. So you can add an Azure account to your PowerShell session, or you can log on and specify your credentials. And at that point, the session knows about your account. I already did this up front, so that should be fine for me. Then the second step is adding this new a service bus entry. So I'm gonna actually paste here some piece of PowerShell. What's important here is, and let me zoom in slightly, is that you give it a unique name that has not been used as a service bus entry before. Namespace type must be messaging. You specify the location, so if your Azure subscription is in Western Europe, you better also have this in Western Europe. It depends a bit on where your Azure subscription is located. And very important is this last one. This is the one that's not available in the UI anymore. So create ACS namespace equal true. So don't forget this one. Without that one, it will never work. So I'm going to hit enter. And if everything goes well, this service bus entry will be provisioned. And as a net result, it will show the service bus creation information. Now, while we're waiting on that one, I'm flipping over to Visual Studio, where I have loaded the core.eventReceivers project, and where I'm going to open up the properties of the core.eventReceivers project, because in this project there is there's a SharePoint tab over here, which allows you to specify an Azure Service Bus connection string. So once the creation is complete, we're going to paste our connection string in here. And that's all you need to do from a Visual Studio perspective, ensuring that there is a valid connection string in here and that's it. So let's see if in the meanwhile this one is ready, and yep, it is. So we see here that we have our connection string. So let's copy that one. Need to copy the endpoint part as well. So I'm gonna copy it. I'm copying the string here. So this should be our service bus connection string. So let's hit save here. So we have this one added. I can close this one, this project file. Next thing is starting the debug. So I put a breakpoint here at the app event receiver. So when the SharePoint calls our app installed event receiver here on the services, this service, this app event receiver service, will be called. This code will fire and will end up in this process event method, and we'll see if you can hit this breakpoint. So let's press F5 and then get this one deployed. Since this is sample is using an app installed event receiver, we need to trust it upfront. So I'm gonna trust it. The application is being installed right now. So it's installing, installation is in progress. And see, our breakpoint is hit. Now let's press F10 to move forward and check the event type. And this is an app installed event as expected. Pressing F5 to let the code continue here. So now the app installed event is further running and doing its thing, meaning creating that list and adding up an item edit event receiver. So I'm gonna log on here. Let's see, we end up in our deploy provider host application. Now I'm gonna go back to the host web, because as part of this demo, a new list was added, remote event receiver jobs. And the app installed event receiver created a new event receiver for this list. So it is namely an item edit event receiver. Jump into this list over here. I'm gonna add a new item. On the item add, we should see our item edit event receiver fire, and as such we should also be able to hit our breakpoint again. So let's call this new item debug demo. Hello PNP friends, and hit save. Let's see what happens. And like expected, we hit our breakpoint. Gonna press F10, check the type, and it's an item edit event. Few things to keep in mind here is that I've set up your service bus properly, one, and secondly, event receivers do time out. So if you debug, especially the app installed event receiver, you cannot keep debug session alive for a long time, because it will break up things. So let's recap on the recommendations for this module. First of all, remote timer jobs is the way forward for your scheduled tasks. So if you have a need for a pattern that replaces server-side timer jobs, then have a look at this remote timer job model. Often you need to do things in an asynchronous fashion to not block the user. And for that, web jobs and Azure Storage Queues provide a very powerful platform. Keep in mind that if you use remote event receivers, that you should not use them for synchronization tasks that rely on a 100% guaranteed execution of the remote event receiver. And for remote event receivers and for app installed events in particular, do avoid long running operations because there is a timeout being set by SharePoint on the app events. Since this is a recording, you do not have an option to ask questions, but there is an option. So all the samples shown in this module are available on Office Dev PnP, which you can reach via ek.ms/officedevpnp. There are more than 100 plus solutions in there, ranging from branding, site provisioning, remote event receivers, UX, and so on. There's a wealth of information in there for you to leverage and use in your work. There's also a very active community on Yammer, which you can reach via ek.ms/officedevpnpyammer. There are more than 2,600 plus people very active at asking questions and answering questions, so go check it out. Dev.office.com is the place to be if you want to learn more about Office 365 development. It provides you with all the training content that you need to get started and all the links to all the relevant resources on the web. And finally, we would appreciate your feedback. So we already mentioned the Office 365 network on Yammer. And don't be confused by IT Pro Network here. It's actually the IT Pro Network is a broader 365 network, which also covers development related groups. If you would need a particular feature and you miss it in the client-side API today, please use User Voice. So User Voice is a platform where you can raise your request to Microsoft and can have other people vote on your request. The more votes your request gets, the more visible it gets for engineering. And finally, we have Stack Overflow, where you can ask technical questions. With that, we came to the end of this module.